This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Behind Enemy Lines. I'm your host, Alejandro Zuniga, here from the Michigan Insider, Michigan.247sports.com. The Michigan football team hosts Bowling Green this weekend for the final non-conference game of the early 2023 slate. We are going to be talking some Bowling Green Falcons football today, but we're going to do things in a little bit of a different order. If you've been listening to this show throughout the year, you know we talk Michigan's upcoming opponent, and then we talk Michigan State and Ohio State. But given the news out of East Lansing over the weekend and throughout this week, we are going to first talk Michigan State. So stay tuned for my conversation with Stephen Brooks from Spartan Tailgate, from our 24/7 Sports Network, and then after that, we'll talk some Bowling Green and wrap things up with the Buckeyes. Let's get started. So as I've had every week through this point in the season, I've got Stephen Brooks from Spartan Tailgate on the line with me to talk about the week it's been, and it's only Tuesday in East Lansing. Stephen, there's a politics podcast that I used to listen to particularly, you know, around the 2016 election, that would always begin by saying exactly what date and time the podcast was recorded, because things could change by the time people listen to it. And I think it's important that we start with that, is that this podcast was recorded on Tuesday, September 12th at 3:39 p.m. And things may have changed by the time you listen to this, because things are a little bit tumultuous in East Lansing right now. We're not going to dive too much into the specifics of the allegations surrounding Mel Tucker. Neither of us are lawyers, and there is a legal and disciplinary process that has to play out. It's a sensitive topic, and from that standpoint, it deserves respect, and we absolutely give it the respect that it deserves. At the same time, we are here to talk football, and like, that's the angle that we generally take as reporters, as journalists. So simply put, where we're at right now is that Mel Tucker has been suspended without pay, and there will be new coaches on the sidelines, or new acting coaches on the sidelines, for Michigan State for the foreseeable future. On the story itself, I was shocked. Most of the college football world was shocked. So, Stephen, I kind of want to start with that, is in, not about, you know, the specific allegations themselves, but this is just a massive earthquake that has, you know, hit the program. What has the reaction been like, both within the program, but also among the Michigan State community that you're interacting with on a regular basis on the 24/7 message boards and across East Lansing?
Yeah, certainly shocked, of course. I think I'm glad you mentioned today, Tuesday. I think people are just now transitioning into their next phase, whatever that is. But, you know, all of Sunday, I mean, some people woke up to it on Sunday. Some people were still up late from Saturday night and saw the reports come out. So Sunday and Monday, I think, were very much shock and confusion and sort of processing. And now it's like, what is next? Where does it go from here? You know, can the program recover? What should be the next moves? You know, who are head coaches that you like? It's now, I think, turning to more forward looking. But yeah, absolutely, it was initially shock. I mean, there's been so much, I don't have to tell your listeners this, there's been so much invested in Mel Tucker leading this program and where he could take it and was supposed to or was hired to do, you know, just where there's so many people had bought in. Now, the last year and a half, I've had some people falling off, of course, and maybe some people were never fully bought in, but a good chunk of the fan base was, especially you go back to whatever the day was when Michigan came over here in 2021. After that, you know, the contract came soon after that, so, you know, expectations were high. And even if you weren't the biggest Mel Tucker fan, like, you obviously were rooting for him to succeed, right? I mean, you kind of had to. You're so tied to him financially, and he's as much as he's overhauled the program and put his stamp on things. So it just seemed like it was a, they were in the middle of a big build, a massive skyscraper type of project, and now it seems like, the cranes and everything are still there, but the building's only partially complete. Now everyone's like, well, what do we do with this? Where do we go from here? So yeah, a lot of shock, a lot of confusion. And again, now I think it's mostly like we're trying to rally around the kids. Of course you feel for them. I mean, my gosh, you grind for 9 months in the off season, the winter, the summer, spring, all those things. And now let's be realistic. Their seasons will be starting this weekend with Washington. I mean, all due respect to Central Michigan and Richmond, but their season really begins now. And for them to have the rug pulled like this, you feel for them, you feel for the coaches who you have to assume know that they're only going to be here a couple more weeks, because we can get into it and take it wherever you want, but it's very clear that this ends with Mel Tucker no longer being the football coach here, if that wasn't clear already. Whether it's a firing or a negotiated separation, we'll figure that out as time progresses here. But make no doubt about it, Mel Tucker has coached his last game at Michigan State.
Yeah, whatever happens over the next few weeks or months, it's probably not going to be pretty, right? And that's kind of that's what happens when you get lawyers involved and you have a legal process that's about to happen. But you've had Mel Tucker releasing statements through his lawyers. As we mentioned, there's going to be a disciplinary hearing scheduled for October 5th, which I believe is Michigan State's bye week. But it's an indefinite suspension. And there are still football games to be played. And as you mentioned, the first one is the big one, the one that Michigan State fans have had circled on their calendar for at least the beginning portion of the 2023 season. And all of a sudden, the attention turns from a football game to what's going on beyond the realms of the gridiron. But to the football effect, we were talking offline about how you haven't had a chance to speak officially, in press conferences with Michigan State players. And that's probably a reasonable decision, given everything that the program is going through right now. Similar to Northwestern not sending student athletes to Big Ten Media Days after what their program went through in the offseason. It's not up to the student athletes to answer questions that should be asked of the administration and of the staff, right, at the Michigan State football program. So I think it's very reasonable that you're not talking to players. That being said, there is now new elevated leadership on the Michigan State football program, including Harlan Barnett, who's going to be the interim coach. He's a Michigan State alumnus. He is. He was worked a lot with the program, both under Mel Tucker and under Mark D'Antonio. And, he's a defensive back. He's a defensive guy. I know you've had a chance to speak with him. What have those conversations been like? And what can he do to salvage what was a semi-promising start to the season and has all of a sudden just completely shifted course?
Yeah, so with Harlan Barnett, he has been talking to some people last night. He has wanted to be a head coach for a while, which I guess I really didn't know. And then he had his press conference today and came out and said, he's just what I just said. He's wanted to be a head coach for a while. Of course, his dream would be the head coach at Michigan State, where he played and has coached, I think 14 collective years now. So, or no, maybe it's it might be. I think it's more than that, actually. I think it's 17, I want to say. But anyway, guy's been around a lot. And then they did bring Mark D'Antonio back as his title as associate head coach, but Barnett is in charge as the acting head coach. And just to be abundantly clear, it's probably obvious to folks, but I mean, Mark D'Antonio is not going to be scheming up third down packages. I mean, that's not what he's here for. Of course, he recruited some of these players still that are still around, including Noah Kim, the quarterback, but it's mostly just to be sort of a calming presence, steady the ship for a while, help Barnett be a head coach, because their relationship goes back, decades. But it's not like he's going to be on there, making calls or anything. It's not an X's and O's thing, but that's probably obvious. But I've had some people, read some comments and everything that maybe, I guess it's not that obvious. So I felt like I should say that with Barnett. Yeah. I mean, there's some of that still applies too, though. I mean, you just want to see him. He's never been in this role. Okay. I mean, so There's that, but you want to see him obviously calm the waters, demonstrate, leadership, get the guys to buy in and get them to play hard, I think is what you're looking at. Now, I mean, I never had much faith that they were going to beat this Washington team anyway. Now there's so many different factors in play. I mean, we've seen it, right? Where adversity strikes, a team rallies and put forth an effort that you just don't see coming. That's a little uncharacteristic in a good way, So maybe they can have a Disney movie type of moment on Saturday. I still doubt it because I just think Washington's that good. And they're built in a way where their passing game is just so prolific. They've got multiple pros at receiver. Michael Penix is outstanding. And they're built in a way to sort of poke the wound of Michigan State's defense, which is that back end that's young and untested. And maybe we'll turn into something as soon as this year. But right now, we just don't know about those guys yet. So from the football side, it doesn't look great. But when you ask about Barnett, I mean, yeah, I think folks just want to see him, just like I mean, it sounds simple, but like show leadership, right? I mean, it's what happened was so bizarre and lacking, judgment and leadership and maturity that I think that alone, just run a clean, smooth operation. Don't have ridiculous stuff happen in games. Be play disciplined, play clean. Don't lose games by coaching, and just keep the team together, keep the program together. Just put something, I guess I could have just said it as simple as this, but like put something out there, put forth a product that fans can be proud of. Nobody's expecting them to make a run at the Big Ten here or do anything ridiculous, but just, don't embarrass the fan base and the supporters, the players, those guys' parents, the staff, all that stuff. Just put forth an admirable showing to give people something that they can, at least tip their cap to at the end of the day. Again, no one's expecting trophies or titles or anything like that, but it could also, we've all seen these things sink and crater into the middle of the earth too. So don't let that happen. Sort of just steady things. If they could keep a couple recruits on board, of course, maybe somehow pick up some more, but that seems completely unrealistic. Yeah, just provide a good experience for who's left, meaning the players, of course, first of all. Give them a good experience for this year. You only get so many college football seasons. Whatever happens next year, wherever they think they're going to be next year, whether it's here, the NFL, or another school, they still have things to play for. They still all need and want good tape for any of those three scenarios. So if you're Barnett, yeah, just make it a good experience for everybody. Make the fans feel good at home with some competent football. But most importantly, make sure the kids have an opportunity, have a season that's worthwhile, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah, this feels like the sort of
Feels like
football
this one.
game that when Michigan State takes the field on Saturday late afternoon, I think it's a 5 o'clock kickoff against Washington, if I'm not mistaken. Feels like the sort of game that Michigan State fans and players and the coaches that are left on the staff are just going to be really appreciative of the fact that they can play a football game and have a bit of the conversation around them shifted away from the things that were outside of their control entirely and have nothing to do with them, and be able to do, what they are either employed or attending Michigan State University to do, which is at least in part to compete at and win football games. I've got to ask, with Mark D'Antonio, he's been retired. It's been a few years, of course, since he's been the fixture in East Lansing that he once was. What's the sentiment among the fan base that he is back in this role with the program? I mean, certainly Mark D'Antonio elevated Michigan State to excellent heights, right? He took Michigan State to the college football playoff before Michigan got there, one of the first Big Ten teams to get there. But then I know the last few seasons under D'Antonio were a letdown, number one, and he left under not fantastic terms, it seemed, with the university. So what's it like from that perspective, having him back?
The feedback and everything that I see and read and hear is overwhelmingly positive. Mark D'Antonio, as you said, the end was not great in several fronts, but he's still the winningest coach here. He still gave people some memories that, they'll take to their deathbed, whether you're talking about the Rose Bowl or the Rocket play or Trouble with the Snap, whatever. There's so many moments that are burned into people's memories from his era in a good way. So Absolutely. And his legacy was, I say all I'd say, his legacy was always going to age well. There were people that definitely wanted him out by the end of that, or even sooner, than he did step away. So there were some ruffled feathers, and maybe, some people had soured on him a little bit at the end, but his legacy was always going to age well in terms of what he did for this program, where he took it, and winning three Big Tens, all the different things that he did. And so he's a celebrated figure. People are happy to see him around. And when you think back to what he initially did, why they how when people first fell in love with Mark D'Antonio, maybe love's a strong word, but where they first bought into him was because he steadied the waters of a tumultuous program coming off of John L. Smith and coming off even, 2 decades before that of highs and lows, peaks and valleys. Also, nothing was consistent until Mark D'Antonio got here. And not that he's gonna be the guy that does that again necessarily, but just that's where they first know him from, is providing some stability and just sort of an adult in the room. So yeah, I think there's a lot of people happy to see him back, happy to hear that they made that call to him, that he was willing to come back and everything. And now that being said, I don't think anybody wants him to take over, regain control of the program, as head coach. I don't think he wants that either, to be honest. So I don't, as long as you're not mistaking this as the permanent fix or anything, but for him to come back and sort of be, the substitute teacher that everybody loves, I think there's a cool element of that. Again, there's still as many of his players got ran out of the program or, moved on, graduated, went to the NFL, whatever. There's still a decent amount that he recruited. So I think overall it's a lot of positive feelings. But if you know him at all, or you just observed him, like, he's not going to be like front and center. He's not a big rah-rah look at me guy. So I don't know if or when, he'll talk to the media. I don't even know if he'll be on the sidelines versus in the booth. That was not clarified today. They said he'll have a headset for whatever that's worth. But yeah, overwhelmingly, I think people are really, he's a familiar, comfortable sight. People have, like I said, those warm feelings come back right away. You see that guy. So in a time where you're feeling shame, you're embarrassed and uncertain about things, I think him coming back as a steadying presence is something that a lot of people are really excited about.
Yeah, if Mark D'Antonio is going to be that fun substitute teacher, maybe we'll see Bill Nye the Science Guy on the sidelines in East Lansing this weekend. But that aside, if he's not the permanent guy, right? It's Michigan State is suddenly thrust into very tumultuous territory and very uncertain territory. So we'll wrap up with this: is like looking at the future. Certainly. There is a process that still has to happen with Mel Tucker. He is suspended. He is not fired. And from a legal perspective, quite frankly, I don't know how much Michigan State can do at looking toward other coaches and beginning that process because you can't, maybe you can't do that while Mel Tucker is still technically not, he's still technically an employee of Michigan State University. But your big picture, right? When he was employed by Michigan State, he transformed the program, right? Is he took a program that Mark D'Antonio had formed in his image of, being gritty, of developing players, and under Mel Tucker, it was, we're going to hit the transfer portal, and we are going to, we're going to get Kenneth Walker and turn him into, what should have been a Heisman finalist, and win, 10 plus games by taking advantage of these new resources that are available to us, which is not what Michigan State had done before. So now Michigan State, does it go in a different direction? Like what? I know there were people who were not always happy with the way that Mel Tucker, approached the program, and last season did not go as well as people thought it might have. This season was not going to go as well as, some of the highs that Michigan State had in the not too distant past. So I know it's very early to be asking this question, and things will absolutely change in the weeks and months to come. But what's the sense of where Michigan State as a football program, where does the ship turn in the future?
Yeah, I'll start by saying Harlan Barnett mentioned today in his press conference that, it's his understanding that, because this is fairly rare. I mean, we see interims every year and acting interim, whatever, but like he can get 10 games. You don't see that too often. So he said it's his understanding that This will he will have the opportunity to throw his hat in the ring for that, if and when that time comes. And that's of course the assumption from everybody that this job is going to come open at some point. So, he'll factor in somewhere, I think, depending on how this season goes. I think he'd still probably be a long shot unless he really works magic this year. And so then, Michigan State, the community, the athletic department, the leadership with still an interim university president, the donor base, that high level of the donor base is going to have to figure out what they're willing to do and who they want to be, because Mel Tucker didn't hear no very often. He wanted the contract, he got that. He wanted the football building, he got that. He wanted a big support staff, he got that. He wanted a big coach, big assistant pool for salaries, support staff assistants, creative, all that type of stuff, nutritionists. He got all that. Yeah, I don't know if he was ever told no, quite honestly. So Michigan State was all in. Are they willing to continue to do that now that it just kind of blew up in their face? Are the donors going to pull back and say, wait a second, I'm not just writing any more huge blind checks here, or I'm going to double down and here's even more. Maybe it goes that way. I don't know, but they're going to have to, all of the power players are going to have to be on the same page and figure out what they want to be, because things are only getting more competitive with the way the conference is going. The sport, is changing to where your team is just your team year to year. You really don't have a program. It's like every year is in its own vacuum almost, because it's so hard to retain players, especially the where Michigan State is on the pecking order right now. Where that will What type of NIL situation are they able to have? Do they want to have? Again, how much do you pay kids right out of high school to lure them here? How much are you saving to retain players that you found and develop? Your How much are you paying your starters versus keeping guys in the pipeline that you wanted to, all those things. I mean, Michigan State, look, they've shown their willingness, man, and they have the money. It's not that, but it's well, it's not that the money isn't there, I guess I'm saying, but will the willingness still be there? That's something that they're going to have to figure out. Now, this is awful. This is ugly. Nobody wanted this. Nobody likes this. But if you want to try and look hard and at a silver lining, it does give Allen Haller, the AD, 3 months here to basically game this out, and come up with a lot of different ideas to vet different people. He just hired a women's basketball coach a couple, earlier this summer. And there was reporting later that he went, Robin Fralick from Bowling Green is who he hired. And there's a reporting that he went down to a Bowling Green game in just nondescript, like all black clothing or something. No Michigan State logos, no nothing. Set up, I think, in the upper deck, or but not anywhere fancy in the arena or anything, and just sort of took in the vibes incognito, asked some fans what they thought of her and stuff. So if he wants to make a few covert trips like that or something and do something and get his homework done early, that is an advantage. They will have time to get this right. And everything I just said about getting all the other people on board, there will be time to make that happen too, which is the opposite of how Mel Tucker got here, where it was very rushed, of the worst possible time basically in the calendar to be doing it. So Michigan State, and they're kind of first to market here. I guess maybe Northwestern, we'll see what happens there, but they're the or one of the first Power Five jobs that's open. So they'll have the opportunity to make a very, very informed hire. And I'll just add real quick, Allen Haller has been the AD for 2 years now, going on 2 years, I want to say. And he's made several hires in the Olympic non-revenue sports side. And his track record so far suggests that he will look for a proven head coach that, maybe has done it at a lower level, like a Robin Fralick from Bowling Green to Michigan State. He's done that elsewhere with softball. I want to say women's soccer as well. But that's his track record thus far. And he had a huge hand in hiring Mel Tucker as well, even though he was not the AD in title at that time. So when you're looking at people or names to watch, don't rule out, I guess, somebody who's having success at a perceived lower level or something like that, but somebody who has been a head coach before. I don't know as much about the hot coordinator name or something like that. To be a first time head coach just doesn't seem to be his style. So yeah, I'm sure we can talk about that a lot more as we move forward. But it's going to be fascinating. Again, the biggest thing is just Michigan State has to figure out what they want to be and what they're willing to invest, because I think this is a shakeup, obviously, that's making everybody question everything.
Certainly, a lot of questions will be asked and answered out of East Lansing in the weeks, months, and potentially years to come. Stephen, thank you so much for taking this time out of what I know has been a very busy week for you. You can follow Stephen over at Spartan Tailgate, which is part of our 24/7 Sports Network. He's on Twitter at StephenM_Brooks. Stephen, I'm sure you're looking forward to having an actual football game to cover this weekend. But thank you, and we will talk more next week.
Absolutely, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We turn our attention now to the Bowling Green Falcons, who are coming to Ann Arbor for the final non-conference game of Michigan's 2023 season. Excited to have with me today Chase Bachman. Chase is a sports reporter and anchor at WTOL 11 in Toledo, also a Bowling Green alumnus. Chase, Bowling Green is 1-1 this season. They opened their year with a loss at Liberty, one at home against Eastern Illinois, and are coming to Ann Arbor as 39-point underdogs. All that being said, there's a lot of buzz around Bowling Green about this game, as we were just talking about off air. Why is that?
I think it's just the proximity of the two programs. Obviously, there's a lot of overlap in terms of, you know, people who are Michigan fans tend to congregate around Ohio. There's plenty of people from Bowling Green who have gone off into the world, including Southeast Michigan, and just the connections between the two programs. Obviously, Jack Harbaugh, who's a graduate of Bowling Green, who goes on to be an assistant coach at Michigan. Scott Leffler, who is an assistant coach at Michigan, goes on to be a head coach at Bowling Green now. So just the, I guess the, you know, connections between the two schools are strong, and they've been, you know, decades in the making. So obviously a lot of history between these two programs, and it's something that a lot of people recognize and appreciate.
Yeah. It's the Bowling Green's sports information director or their PR staff did a great job on the game notes this week. It's, I mean, as a journalist and someone who's covering, you know, covering teams that you might not know as much about, it makes my job a lot easier. But they did a great job in kind of listing out all of the connections between Bowling Green and the University of Michigan. And you just named a few of them, but just to make sure we get their names out there, head coach Scott Leffler, obviously University of Michigan, former quarterback, former assistant with the program. He was, I believe, a GA or a student assistant in 97 when Michigan won its national championship. Co-defensive coordinator Steve Morrison, pass game coordinator Eric Campbell, all Michigan grads, and then the Harbaugh family themselves. Right, we've spent a lot of time this week, obviously talking to Jim Harbaugh. It's rare that you'll see the head coach of one school singing the unofficial fight song of the school they're about to be facing, but Jim Harbaugh on the radio last night was singing "I Ziggy Zumba," which It's you just don't see that very often. It's not
Oh, well,
you
first
don't
time
get
I've seen it before.
yeah. It's you know I don't think I've heard Jim Harbaugh sing before. So so that was new to me. But this Bowling Green program and what Scott LaFleur and his staff have done, it's been a very big rebuild, right? And I was reading that when he took over, it had been the three worst seasons of Bowling Green football, and those followed the three prior were the three worst seasons of Bowling Green football record-wise. So it's been a long rebuild. I guess why has it been such a long rebuild? What happened to get to this point, and where is Bowling Green in that process?
Well, I think a lot of people in Bowling Green probably trace it back to just a decade ago when Bowling Green was one of the best programs in the MAC. If you remember, I mean, they were going to three straight MAC title games. They were beating teams like Northern Illinois. They had won MAC titles in 2013 and 2015. It was after that 2015 team, Dino Babers ends up leaving the program, takes the Syracuse job, and then Bowling Green hires a guy named Mike Jinks in the next 2.5 years. They end up going a combined 7-24, so about as bad as it can go probably for a program. And that's where Scott Leffler comes into the picture. He starts off in 2019 and 2020, the COVID year. They were one of the youngest teams in college football. I think I tallied it somewhere. The 2020 team was 65% freshmen. So I mean, one of the youngest teams that you could possibly have. They were relying on the transfer portal a ton to try to make up their roster. So it's just one of the toughest rebuilds in college football. It's still obviously happening right now. They're trying to get to a point where they're competing for MAC championships to go to bowl games. And obviously they reached one of those goals last year. They got to a bowl game. They've been kind of in contention for a MAC title. So they're just continuing to try to rebuild, but it's been one of the tougher jobs in college football.
Now, one thing that struck me when I was looking at that Bowling Green roster is typically when you think of programs and rebuilds, and I mean, honestly, when you look at any program across the college football landscape, you'd expect there to be a lot of incoming transfers and a lot of transfer portal action. And it, at least in terms of, the two deep, there just isn't a ton of that on Bowling Green. That being said, one name that will be very familiar to Michigan fans is Connor Basilak, right? He was the quarterback at Indiana last year. He's been the signal caller for these first couple of games for Bowling Green. Really struggled in that opener. I think his passing line, if I wrote that down correctly, was 6 for 21 with three interceptions, which is yikes. But rebounded well last week. Back at home against Eastern Illinois, he went 23 for 28, 319 passing yards and three touchdowns. One thing when I was watching some of the highlights against Liberty, Connor Basilak, he was pressured quite a bit. The havoc rate for Liberty was quite high. And he had a much cleaner pocket against Eastern Illinois. But I guess walk us through that Bowling Green offense a little bit. What's Connor Basilak shown in his short stint so far? And who are some of the other offensive weapons that Michigan fans should keep an eye on?
Yeah, obviously Basilak is a name that Michigan fans are familiar with from Indiana last year. Between Liberty and Eastern Illinois, now obviously the level of competition is different going from on the road at Liberty to at home against an FCS opponent. But it really was kind of a night and day performance in terms of the interceptions thrown against Liberty versus, 23 for 28, I think was the stat line that he had against Eastern Illinois. I mean, a really much improved game for Basilak. And not just him. I mean, they've got a couple of wide receivers that are very good. Odu-Hilaire is somebody who's got a 37-game reception streak, I think it was, going all the way back to his freshman year at Alabama A&M, which was 2019. So he's been one of the most consistent wide receivers in college football. Tight end Harold Fannin Jr., he had 100 yards receiving last week against Eastern Illinois. He's obviously another steady presence on the offense. Got a running back, Teron Keith, another guy who was a 100-yard receiver. So a couple of guys that can obviously, when they get the ball in their hands, that they can do some stuff in the open field. On the offense, you've obviously got the in the backfield, Terrion Stewart, who's one of the more dominating forces for the offense. Missed out last year for mental health reasons, sat out. He's back now. He's been one of the most talented people that they've had in the backfield, averages more than 6 yards a carry, which I think is a program best all time in terms of yards per carry. Had a couple of touchdowns last week against Eastern Illinois. So he's somebody who, when he gets into the open field, he can make stuff happen. And then they also rely on him in short yardage situations down near the goal line to score. So, obviously some really talented guys, and they'll have to see what they can do against a much more talented defense than they're probably used to seeing. I mean, if not probably the most talented defense that they will see in their college football career. So a couple of talented guys, they're going to see what they can try to attack here, because there's not too many weaknesses on the Michigan front seven or the back end.
Yeah, it's when you talk to coaches, when you talk to, say, Michigan's coaches, they're always going to say nice things about, whatever opponent they're facing, right? But Jim Harbaugh was especially complimentary of what Bowling Green is doing offensively. I mean, he said flat out that Bowling Green runs some things, some receiver patterns, some things in their passing game that he thinks Michigan should scout and then steal. So that's obviously complimentary of a coach that he's friends with in Scott Leffler and of that rebuild that he's doing. But Hilaire, that you mentioned as that receiver, he stood out to me as well. I saw he had a couple touchdown, 200 plus receiving yards game. I don't know if that was last year or a couple of years ago against Toledo. But seems like Bowling Green really tries to get the ball in his hands. And it seems like anytime the ball is near his hands, he manages to pull it in. So that'll be a test. For a Michigan secondary, I think that, that not that they've struggled, because they certainly haven't, but they've had a few guys banged up and are working their starters back in. And then you mentioned a running back, Tarron Keith, who had 100 plus yards receiving last game against Eastern Illinois. A thing that stood out to me is that all 100 receiving yards were after the catch. So he was getting the ball a lot around the line of scrimmage and making things happen once the ball was in his hands. So a couple names to watch there. As we turn now to the defensive side of the ball, Chase, it's a unit that gave up a lot of yards against Liberty. Now, Liberty is a team that historically and especially recently has been a very potent offensive team, right? Still gave up 300 plus yards last week against Eastern Illinois. What are some things Michigan fans should be watching for, when Michigan has the ball?
Obviously, when it comes to defense, the go-to guys for them are Darren Anders and their inside linebacker core. I mean, they are guys who get to the ball a lot. I think Darren Anders is closing in on the 300-yard mark or the 300-tackle mark for his career. One of the guys who's been a really consistent presence for them all 4 years that he's played. I think he averages something like 10 tackles a game. So he's going to be a guy who is going to have to get in a lot on those plays and try to shut down, that running attack from Corum, from Edwards. He's going to try to, shut things down like that. They're going to try to get into the backfield. But again, this is one of those, most talented offensive lines that Bowling Green's had to go up against. So it's tough to say really how they're going to fare against something that, some group that talented. It's going to be tough. Another guy to look out for, Joseph Sipp Jr., was another guy. I think he's top 25 in the country right now in tackles. I ranks third in the MAC right now in tackles. Another guy who obviously gets in on a lot of plays. He's going to be a name that you probably hear a lot as Bowling Green plays. A couple of guys on the edge, Demetrius Hardeman, Davon Ferguson. Both guys have kind of shown an ability to get into the backfield and get to the quarterback, but obviously, like I've said before, that's going to be a tough thing to do against a good offensive line in Michigan and obviously a very mobile quarterback in JJ McCarthy. So it'll be interesting to see that battle kind of play out over 4 quarters.
Yeah, I was certainly JJ McCarthy has had two of the best games of his career. And yeah, opponent caveats apply, but when he's setting passing percentage records as he did in week one and then came very close to doing that again last week against UNLV, one thing that Michigan's coaches are very, very happy with is no sacks. No sacks so far against that Michigan offensive line. JJ McCarthy, obviously, identifying protections and moving in the pocket has something to do with it. And a Michigan offense that, if you're nitpicking, it's that the ground game has not gotten going in the way you'd expect, given Michigan's success in that aspect in 2021 and 2022. All that being said, And as you've sort of alluded to over the last couple of minutes, this is a 39-point spread at last I saw. You know, this is not a game that the odds makers think is going to be particularly close. You know, as Michigan fans are looking at a non-conference schedule that has been pretty weak, the games have sort of played out at least through 2 weeks as most people expected, right? Is that Michigan took early leads, built comfortable leads, and, you know, scuffled a bit maybe in the fourth quarter with backups in, but in games that never really were in question. So Chase, as you're watching this game on Saturday, you know, it's going to be under the lights. It's going to be a fun atmosphere and hopefully a good experience for the Bowling Green players. But is there something in particular you're watching for, whether it's to keep the game closer than people expect or just something that you think Bowling Green can take away from this game as it chases bowl eligibility for another season?
I think the one thing that people may be surprised about if they're not really paying attention to is Bowling Green's special teams. I think they've kind of quietly had one of the best special teams units in the country. Michigan is obviously no stranger to, you know, high level special teams play. But I think I saw somewhere the Falcons have blocked 11 kicks since 2021, which is best in the country. Payshawn Wimberly is one of those special teams guys, led the country in blocked punts with three last year. So it's a lot of times that those blocks get returned for touchdowns. So don't be surprised if at some point during the game, you know, there's a extra point or a field goal or something that gets blocked. And it's not necessarily an indictment of Michigan special teams as much as it is a you know, referendum on how good Bowling Green's special teams is, because they just seem to have this ability to get their hands up and block kicks. And, you know, obviously nobody goes into a football game looking for a special teams battle, but I think this will be a really high level chess match between Bowling Green's special teams coach, Alex Bayer, and Jay Harbaugh. So if you're really interested in that, that'll be something to look for is the special teams battle.
Yeah, that's an area Michigan has typically been very strong in these last couple seasons. I think I saw that Bowling Green did have a blocked field goal return for a touchdown against Liberty in week one. And that seemed to kind of kickstart a game that was veering more toward blowout category and gave Bowling Green a chance to stay in it. And Michigan is breaking a new specialist and had some issues in its kicking game in week one. Chase, thank you so much for taking us behind enemy lines and giving us a closer look at Bowling Green. Chase Bachman, again, he's a sports reporter and anchor at WTOL 11 in Toledo. Chase, where can folks who want to follow your work? I know you are very deeply embedded with the Bowling Green program. Where can folks follow you throughout this week before this game?
Yeah, absolutely. Best place to find me is on X, formerly known as Twitter. You can follow me at Chase Bachman. That's where I do all my best tweeting.
It'll be, I'm curious to see at what point people stop saying X, formerly known as Twitter, or Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it. Like, nobody just says X. And this is very much a tangent, but I wonder if that will ever happen or if the program or if the platform will collapse before that does. Anyway, Chase, thank you so much for your time. Stick around. We'll be right back talking about Ohio State. Turn our attention now to the Ohio State Buckeyes. Have with me, as I do every week, Patrick Murphy, who covers the Buckeyes for Bucknuts over on 24/7 Sports. Patrick, Buckeyes beat Youngstown State by a very familiar score, 35-7, equal scoreline to the Michigan football team. Western Kentucky is up next for Ohio State. That's a 4 o'clock kickoff at the Horseshoe. Of course, that's the final kind of tune-up game, if you will. Western Kentucky's got, I shouldn't call them just a tune-up game. They've got a good offense that will certainly test the Ohio State defense. But before that big marquee showdown with Notre Dame coming up in a couple weeks. So Patrick, week one to week two, the mantra across football really is that's when you see the most growth in a football team. So what were your takeaways? What are the areas that Ohio State improved week one to week two?
Quarterback play for sure. Kyle McCord certainly looked more comfortable. And I know we talked last week, he was improved. You know, I thought he had a better second half than a first half, and he even talked about after the game, this was, you know, obviously a more comfortable environment playing at home, and he'd done it before, right? He'd gone out there one game and pretty much, you know, even though they haven't named him the full-time starter, I think we can all kind of read what the actions are here, and he took the vast majority of the snaps again. So I thought that was improved. Obviously, if you look at the stats, he links up with Marvin Harrison Jr., his high school teammate, for 2 touchdowns. You'd like to see that if you're a Buckeye fan. And they just looked more in rhythm. It wasn't perfect by any stretch, but certainly a step in the right direction. Defensively, again, pretty good. They did allow Youngstown State 2 drives at the start of either half. One that was Youngstown State's first touchdown, and the other was, I believe it ended in an interception, which was the first turnover of the year for the Buckeyes. So you want to go back and evaluate those if you're one of the defensive coaches, and what kind of went wrong there. But everything else was pretty good, as you would expect against an FCS team. So good to see those two things kind of continue in a positive direction if you're a Buckeye fan.
Patrick, well, what's the temperature in the room right now with Ohio State fans? It's coming from a Michigan perspective, I'm not as plugged into that fan base. So I kind of hear when you're on Twitter, when you're on the message board, sometimes it's you know, things are as good as they possibly could be, or as worse as bad as they could be, with really no in between. You know, I hear Joel Klatt over on his fantastic podcast talking that there should be a level of concern with Ohio State with how they looked last week, or in week one, after, you know, a better offensive outing, after, you know, the home opener, a comfortable victory, especially after those first couple series, things cooled down a bit, or is there still some concern among Ohio State fans?
There is rarely a week that goes by, and I say that in or out of the season, where there isn't a significant amount of concern among Ohio State fans. I think even after they won the national championship in 2014, it was like immediately on to being concerned about what's coming next. And I say that somewhat jokingly, but look, this is the standard at Ohio State. And obviously they've come off 2 years where I would say fans feel like they didn't meet the standard. Obviously losing to Michigan and 2 years ago, not even making it to the playoff. So I think, look, it's tough to really make, and I said this on our podcast after the game, it's tough to make like really sound statements about a lot of these teams early that haven't played anyone. I'm sure you're in a similar boat with the Michigan situation. Now Ohio State did play Indiana, but I still, as we've talked about, I don't think Indiana's going to be that great. And that was week one on the road. So I think there are definitely areas that you should be concerned about. I think the fact that Ohio State on either side of the line of scrimmage in the trenches didn't bully a Youngstown State team is a problem for this team, especially considering the lack of a pass rush that they had a year ago at times, and the fact that we knew coming in that this offensive line was going to be questionable. So I would say that there is some area for concern, but the fans, I think, probably always oversell things, and then the coaches try and like bring it back when we talk to them. And Ryan Day keeps saying that the things he sees are fixable, right? Especially on the offensive line. So we need to see those things be fixed. And there were some good plays from the offensive line in this game. And the defensive line did some things, especially on the interior. But I understand from a fan perspective, especially when 2 weeks from now, you've got to go to South Bend and Notre Dame Stadium and play in a major game. And in that game, things will have to be at a much higher level than they've been through these first 2 weeks. So there's definitely concerns among Buckeye fans, I guess, is the short answer to your question.
And if you've listened to this show throughout the week or throughout the weeks that we've done this, Patrick, you've talked at length really about the offensive line, mm-hmm. and particularly the couple of new tackles. I believe it's the left tackle who's the transfer from San Diego State. Is that correct?
Yep.
And I was reading coverage over on Bucknuts, over on 24/7 Sports. You guys do a great job. But one thing that really stood out to me was that Ohio State, through the first couple weeks of the season, ranks 128th in the country in third down conversion percentage, just a tick under 17%. So certainly some areas to clean up. Western Kentucky coming to town this week and should maybe give an opportunity for that. Patrick will be talking next week with an eye to recap that. And then, of course, the biggest focus looking ahead at what's going to be a really fun game against Notre Dame in a couple weeks. Patrick, thank you so much. You can follow him on Twitter @_Pat_Murphy. Of course, follow all his work over at Bucknuts and at 24/7 Sports. Appreciate it, Patrick.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
And that's going to do it for this week's episode of Behind Enemy Lines. For myself, Alejandro Zuniga, and all our staff over at the Michigan Insider, thank you so much for listening. We have a lot more content over on our website, michigan.247sports.com. So if you're looking for in-depth breakdowns of the Michigan football team, of who's coming on recruiting visits this weekend, videos about the program, and much, much more, pretty much anything you could possibly want about what's becoming a very exciting season for the Wolverines, you can find that over at michigan.247sports.com. I'll see you at the big house.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe? Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.